ladies and gentlemen, good, fabulous, wonderful Wednesday morning, July 18, 2012. This is Paul Hutchings dialing in from beautiful Southeast Idaho. Very excited to be on the line with you this morning. Very excited and enthused and inspired that you, my friend, decided to pick up the phone this morning and dial into this mindset Think and Grow Rich Mastermind call. You've made a great decision, and I am so excited for the content that we're going to go through on the call this morning and for the discussion that we're going to have afterward. And I'm even more excited about what's going to happen to me and you if we decide to continue to pick up this phone on a daily basis each morning and dial in to this call. You know, yesterday as I was prospecting for my primary business, I had the opportunity to meet an individual, a young man, a young father who's struggling financially in life. Really, you know, we got on the phone call right off the bat. He comes out and, you know, starts sharing with me how tough life is. He's a single dad. He's paying child support. He's working at a very low-paying job. He's having money deducted from his paycheck. And he was hungry, he sounded hungry for some changes in life. And I had the opportunity on that phone call, because I was engaging in the activities that I know will move my business forward, I had the opportunity to share with him a couple of secrets of life that I have experienced and learned from very wise men and women who have gone before me. And the secrets that I shared with that young man on that phone call yesterday were this. I said, "My friend, it sounds like you have a true desire to change your life. Is that the case?" And he said, "Paul, absolutely. I have such a desire to change my life." I said, "Do you have a pen and a piece of paper?" And he said, "Give me just a second." And he pulled out a piece of paper and something to write with. And I said, let me share something with you that will allow you to pull yourself out of the situation that you're in right now and deliver everything that you could possibly want in life to you and to your precious two little children that you're working so hard to support and provide a life for." And he sat there with pen in hand and paper on his desk, ready for the secrets that I had the opportunity to share with him. And the things that I share, and he may be on this call. He may be on this call this morning, and if you are, my friend, congratulations for taking some advice and taking an action to start moving your life in a better direction. These were the two things that I shared with that individual. I said there are two things that you need to be aware of that will help you move your life in a better direction. I said, number one, if you start to change your thinking, if you start to think like wealthy people think, if you start to think like happy people think, if you start to change your mind and change your philosophy, what will follow next, as sure as night follows day and day follows night, as sure as the sun comes up in the morning and as sure as the sun goes down in the evening, my friend, is when you start to change your thinking, you will then start to change the things that you do. And once you start to think like wealthy people think, you'll start to do the things that wealthy people do, and surely your life will change. And I invited him, I gave him the number to this call this morning, and I said, this is one of the things that we do, that I do every day to work on my thinking, to work on my philosophy, so that I can formulate better plans, so that I can develop more faith, so that I can have a vision that's more crisp and more clear and is absent the confusion and lack of organization that comes at us in life like machine gun bullets trying to, you know, blow us off our path. That's the main reason I get on this call, to perfect and work on my philosophy on a daily basis. And I want to share just quickly something that falls right along with what I'm talking about here this morning, and I think will really drive the point home as to why it's so important to get on this call on a daily basis and engage in that process of thinking and processing ideas and coming up with better solutions and better plans for our lives. Last night, yesterday and the day before, mainly yesterday, was probably one of the toughest days in business that I've had. I've had a couple of tough days that, you know, I think back on in my days of business, and there have been a couple of really tough days. And yesterday was one of those days. And as I sat down last night, it was about 10:30, to write in my journal to ask myself, you know, what are the lessons here, Paul, that you are meant to learn from the things that are happening in your life right now? Because that's one of the things that we can do in formulating our philosophy, and that is one of the tenets of, I believe, a successful philosophy is understanding what Dr. Napoleon Hill teaches us in this book, Think and Grow Rich, this one little piece of information that in the midst of what seem to be our greatest struggles or challenges in life are our greatest opportunities and our greatest lessons. And another piece of philosophy that I got from my good friend and mentor, Doc Fran, is I accept each and every event that happens in my life as an experience that God has given me for my own benefit. Easy to say, a little bit more difficult to practice. Well, yesterday was one of those days that was a little bit more difficult for me to practice. But last night, as I sat down to write in my journal, I said to myself, what are the lessons here? You know, what am I supposed to learn from this? And you know what? I found some treasures. But right before I wrote in my journal, I saw a message from one of our valued callers, you know, that gets on this call every day. And she said this. I want to read to you what she wrote. And keep in mind, this came at a time when I was having one of the more difficult days that I've had in business. And she said this: good evening. I hope this finds you at a time when you might need to see it. I just have to share that I am experiencing more and more often what I can only define as a state of grace. And instead of being shocked and amazed by it, I am learning to simply feel that deep sense of gratitude for these moments. Moments that I hope will become even more frequent. Smiley face. I also know why this is happening, and it is because of the morning mastermind group, this call. That and repeating my major definite purpose combined with the self-confidence statement. It is incredible to actually experience what all of you have talked about and have these things physically manifest in my life. People are showing up that have come out of nowhere to assist me in my growth. It is truly amazing. I guess I just want to say thank you. Thank you so much for leading this group. I am deeply appreciative. Now I have my actual mastermind group, and I am off to create my private group a la Napoleon Hill. Be blessed, my friend. And Liz, thank you so much for that beautiful message that came right at a time when I needed it, and you've given me permission to share it on this call to illustrate, my friends, the result, or at least part of the result, of what will happen if you become a student and you get on this call every day and you think and you use your mind and you process ideas and you come to better conclusions. Liz just demonstrated in that paragraph what will happen for you as sure as night follows day and as day follows night. And that is, people will come into your life seemingly out of nowhere. Circumstances will happen in your life, seemingly very miraculous. Money will start coming into your life from miraculous places, or it may seem to be. Everything will start to fall into place in your life, in many different aspects of life, when you become a practitioner and you become a lifelong committed student to forming a better philosophy, to seeking, to finding, to understanding, and to applying the truth in your life and endeavoring to adjust your character to conform with laws and principles that govern this universe in which we live. It's a beautiful thing, my friends, and I'm so excited to be a part of it. And I hope that you know, you've been touched by what Liz had to share, and you've been encouraged by what Liz has to share as an added testimonial. You know, Napoleon Hill spent 25 years studying success He studied literally, I believe it was over 25,000 people, and among those 25,000 people, over 500 of them, the most successful people on the planet. He spent 25 years analyzing these lives and formulating a philosophy and a plan and a recipe and writing it down in a book called Think and Grow Rich. And this is why we call it the Think and Grow Rich Call. On a daily basis, we study this book. We study it. We endeavor to apply what it teaches us. And Liz, as she stated this morning on that message, is applying the major definite purpose, the self-confidence formula. She's getting on this call every morning. She's exposing herself to ideas. And isn't it interesting that she's having the exact same experience as those who have done what she has done and stayed persistent with the actions that Dr. Hill, after 25 years of research and study, careful research and study, gave us in the formula. So it's a fascinating thing. It's a beautiful thing. It's a big thing. This is something so big that we're a part of, ladies and gentlemen. And it's a true honor and a true privilege. That being said, let's jump into the content of the call today and let's work on our philosophy. And we are in, towards the latter end of the book in chapter 15, which is entitled How to Outwit the Six Ghosts of Fear. And we're going to start with the first ghost, which is the fear of poverty. There can be no compromise between poverty and riches. The two roads that lead to poverty and riches travel in opposite directions. If you want riches, you must refuse to accept any circumstance that leads toward poverty. The word riches is here used in its broadest sense, meaning financial, spiritual, mental, and material estates. The starting point of the path that leads to riches is desire. In chapter 1, you received full instructions for the proper use of desire. In this chapter, on fear, you have complete instructions for preparing your mind to make practical use of desire. Here, then, is the place to give yourself a challenge, which will definitely determine how much of this philosophy you have absorbed. Here is the point at which you can turn profit and foretell accurately what the future holds in store for you. If, after reading this chapter, you are willing to accept poverty, you may as well make up your mind to receive poverty. This is one decision you cannot avoid. If you demand riches, determine what form and how much will be required to satisfy you. You know the road that leads to riches. You have been given a roadmap, which, if followed, will keep you on that road. If you neglect to make the start or stop before you arrive, no one will be to blame but you. This responsibility is yours. No alibi will save you from accepting the responsibility if you now fail or refuse to demand riches of life, because the acceptance calls for but one thing, incidentally, the only thing you can control, and that is a state of mind. A state of mind is something that one assumes. It cannot be purchased. It must be created. Fear of poverty is a state of mind, nothing else. But it is sufficient to destroy one's chances of achievement in any undertaking, a truth which became painfully evident during the Depression. This fear paralyzes the faculty of reason, destroys the faculty of imagination, kills off self-reliance, undermines enthusiasm, discourages initiative, leads to uncertainty of purpose, encourages procrastination, wipes out enthusiasm, and makes self-control an impossibility. It takes the charm from one's personality, destroys the possibility of accurate thinking, diverts concentration of effort, it masters persistence, turns the willpower into nothingness, destroys ambition, beclouds the memory, and invites failure in every conceivable form. It kills love and assassinates the finer emotions of the heart, discourages friendship and invites disaster in 100 forms, leads to sleeplessness, misery, and unhappiness, and all this despite the obvious truth that we live in a world of overabundance of everything the heart could desire, with nothing standing between us and our desires, excepting lack of a definite purpose. The fear of poverty is, without a doubt, the most destructive of the six basic fears. It has been placed at the head of the list because it is the most difficult to master. Considerable courage is required to state the truth about the origin of this fear, and still greater courage to accept the truth after it has been stated. The fear of poverty grew out of man's inherited tendency to prey upon his fellow man economically. Nearly all animals lower than man are motivated by instinct, but their capacity to think is limited. Therefore, they prey upon one another physically. Man, with his superior sense of intuition, with the capacity to think and to reason, does not eat his fellow man bodily. He gets more satisfaction out of eating him financially. Man is so avaricious that every conceivable law has been passed to safeguard him from his fellow man. Of all the ages of the world of which we know anything, the age in which we live seems to be the one that is outstanding because of man's money madness. A man is considered less than the dust of the earth unless he can display a fat bank account. But if he has no money, never mind how he acquired it, he is a king or a big shot. He is above the law. He rules in politics. He dominates in business. And the whole world about him bows in respect when he passes. Nothing brings man so much suffering and humility as poverty. Only those who have experienced poverty understand the full meaning of this. It is no wonder that man fears poverty. Through a long line of inherited experiences, man has learned for sure that some men cannot be trusted where matters of money and earthly possessions are concerned. This is a rather stinging indictment, the worst part of it being that it is true. The majority of marriages are motivated by the wealth possessed by one or both of the contracting parties. It is no wonder, therefore, that the divorce courts are so busy. So eager is man to possess wealth that he will acquire it in whatever manner he can, through legal methods if possible, through other methods if necessary or expedient. Self-analysis may disclose weaknesses which one does not like to acknowledge. This form of examination is essential to all who demand of life more than mediocrity and poverty. Remember, as you check yourself point by point, that you are both the court and the jury, the prosecuting attorney and the attorney for the defense, and that you are the plaintiff and the defendant. Also, that you are on trial. Face the facts squarely. Ask yourself definite questions and demand direct replies. When the examination is over, you will know more about yourself. If you do not feel that you can be an impartial judge in this self-examination, call upon someone who knows you well to serve as judge while you cross-examine yourself. You are after the truth. Get it, no matter at what cost, even though it may temporarily embarrass you. The majority of people, if asked what they fear most, would reply, "I fear nothing." The reply would be inaccurate, because few people realize that they are bound, handicapped, whipped spiritually and physically through some form of fear. So subtle and deeply seated is the emotion of fear that one may go through life burdened with it, never recognizing its presence. Only a courageous analysis will disclose the presence of this universal enemy. When you begin such an analysis, search deeply into your character. Here is a list of the symptoms for which you should look. Indifference, commonly expressed through lack of ambition, willingness to tolerate poverty, acceptance of whatever compensation life may offer without protest, mental and physical laziness, lack of initiative, imagination, enthusiasm, and self-control. Indecision, the habit of permitting others to do one's thinking, staying on the fence. Doubt, generally expressed through alibis and excuses designed to cover up, explain away, or apologize for one's failures. Sometimes expressed in the form of envy of those who are successful or by criticizing them. Worry, usually expressed by finding fault with others. A tendency to spend beyond one's income, neglect of personal appearance, scowling and frowning, intemperance in the use of alcoholic drink, sometimes through the use of narcotics, nervousness, lack of poise, self-consciousness, and lack of self-reliance. Overcaution, the habit of looking for the negative side of every circumstance, thinking and talking of possible failure instead of concentrating upon the means of succeeding. Knowing all the roads to disaster, but never searching for the plans to avoid failure. Waiting for the right time to begin putting ideas and plans into action until the waiting becomes a permanent habit. remembering those who have failed and forgetting those who have succeeded, seeing the hole in the donut but overlooking the donut. Pessimism, leading to indigestion, poor elimination, auto-intoxication, bad breath, and bad disposition. Procrastination, the habit of putting off until tomorrow that which should have been done last year. Spending enough time in creating alibis and excuses to have done the job. This symptom is closely related to overcaution, doubt, and worry. Refusal to accept responsibility when it can be avoided. Willingness to compromise rather than put up a stiff fight. Compromising with difficulties instead of harnessing and using them as a stepping stones to advancement. Bargaining with life for a penny instead of demanding prosperity, opulence, riches, contentment, and happiness. Planning what to do if and when overtaken by failure instead of burning all bridges and making retreat impossible. Weakness of and often total lack of self-confidence, definiteness of purpose, self-control, initiative, enthusiasm, ambition, thrift, and sound reasoning ability. Expecting poverty instead of demanding riches. Association with those who accept poverty instead of seeking the company of those who demand and receive riches. And the good news, my friend, is that being on this call, we are associating with people all across the United States of America who are refusing to accept poverty and are instead demanding and receiving riches, and that is a beautiful thing. And I'm going to stop the content there. Anxious to hear your thoughts in the mastermind portion of this, the call, as we partake in the cumulative wisdom that is on this call, in the people, in the community that are here on this call right now. Let me open up the line. Star 6 to unmute your line. Would love to hear from you.
Hey, Paul.
Bill Lynch here.
Yes, good morning. Someone right before Bill. Was that Melvin?
Yep. It's Melvin here.
Good morning, Melvin.
Hey, Paul, you went over a lot of things there, and I just wanted to just quickly say that the thing that I hope everybody keeps in mind at all times is balance. Never lose sight of the word balance. Balance is very key for anything. No matter what it is, balance needs to be at play. And to have the riches that we really desire, there's a lot of things that we have to be putting in place. It's the money is very important. It's one aspect of it. You know, I've heard people say, you know, it's up, you know, it's right up there next to air, to breathing. But all these different things are necessary. Your self-image, what you think of yourself, respect for other people, just so many things that, and hopefully, and being on this call, we'll learn many of those different things to be a balanced human being, to be a balanced person, to where all of those things are falling into place, and we really have the joy and happiness that we seek. Because if you look at many people that have had great deals of money and fortune and fame, had some very short lives and messed themselves up with drugs or so just something to keep in mind, the word balance and to work to have that. And with that, back to you, Paul.
Melvin, I appreciate those thoughts. And real quick, Bill, before I turn it over to you, let me read real quick some continuing statements from Dr. Hill. I stopped before we got into these, but you know they pertain specifically to what Melvin was just talking about. Dr. Hill says, some will ask, why did you write a book about money? Why measure riches in dollars alone? Some will believe, and rightly so, that there are other forms of riches more desirable than money. Yes. There are riches which cannot be measured in terms of dollars, but there are millions of people who will say, give me all the money I need and I will find everything else I want. The major reason why I wrote this book on how to get money is the fact that the world has but lately passed through an experience that left millions of men and women paralyzed with the fear of poverty. What this sort of fear does to one was well described by Westbrook Pegler in the New York Times World Telegram as follows. Money is only clamshells or metal discs or scraps of paper, and there are treasures of the heart and soul which money cannot buy. But most people, being broke, are unable to keep this in mind and sustain their spirits. When a man is down and out on the street, unable to get any job at all, something happens to his spirit, which can be observed in the droop of his shoulders, the set of his hat, his walk, and his gaze. He cannot escape a feeling of inferiority among people with regular employment, even though he knows they are definitely not his equals in character, intelligence, or ability. These people, even his friends, feel, on the other hand, a sense of superiority and regard him, perhaps unconsciously, as a casualty. He may borrow for a time, but not enough to carry on in his accustomed way. And he cannot continue to borrow very long. But borrowing in itself, when a man is borrowing merely to live, is a depressing experience, and the money lacks the power of earned money to revive his spirits. Of course, none of this applies to bums or habitual ne'er-do-wells, but only to men of normal ambitions and self-respect. And then this final paragraph, when a man is down and out, he has time on his hands for brooding. He may travel miles to see a man about a job and discover that the job is filled or that it is one of those jobs with no base pay, but only a commission on the sale of some useless knick-knack which nobody would buy except out of pity. Turning that down, he finds himself back on the street with nowhere to go but just anywhere. So he walks and walks. He gazes into store windows at luxuries which are not for him and feels inferior and gives way to people who stop to look with an active interest. He wanders into the railroad station or puts himself down in the library to ease his legs and soak up a little heat. But that isn't looking for a job, so he gets going again. He may not know it, but his aimlessness would give him away even if the very lines of his figure did not. He may be well dressed in clothes left over from the days when he had a steady job, but the clothes cannot describe his droop. And then he talks about, you know, an ad for a job, and this man goes and, you know, to see about another job, and the ad says state religion. Can you imagine the brutal effrontery of anyone who demands a good clean penman for 11 cents an hour inquiring into the victim's religion? But that is what busted people are offered. So very relevant truth in what, you know, what Melvin said. Balance, yes, there are great riches outside of money, but you know what? Money is so incredibly important because it has a direct impact on many of those other great riches in life. Bill, go ahead, sir.
Yes, good morning, Paul. This morning as I was looking out my window, I saw a gentleman, you know, not dressed really scroungy, but, you know, not dressed great. And he was going from, because today is trash day, and he was going from garbage pan to garbage pan, pulling out, you know, bottles and then putting him in a shopping cart that he had with a big plastic bag and filling it up and just going from, you know, place to place, from house to house. And I said, you know, is he really a victim of society, or is this his choice? Did he really choose to be this way, or is it something he has no control over? In most cases, you know, a lot of times it's one of choice, not necessarily one of circumstances, which reminded me, brought back memories of when I was in going to college and working during the summer, and I was working in a bank. And this gentleman who used to walk around town in a long winter coat and dressed very shabbily, he would come in the morning. He had a very small bank account. He would come in the morning, draw out a couple of dollars, and at the evening before the bank closed, he would deposit what he didn't use. And everybody felt kind of sorry for him, saying, this poor gentleman, you know, he walks all over town, and he has very little money to spend. Well, when he died, they found in his house hundreds of thousands of dollars under his mattress. And because that is what I call fear of poverty, afraid he was going to lose it all, and never really lived his life. And it's really a shame to see what people do to hoard money when people have money, what they do to drive power, to just influence others and lose their self-worth. But just seeing that man this morning going from garbage pan to garbage pan, it just brought a lot of thoughts to my mind. Is, you know, what choices do we really make in life to be where we want to be? And perfectly, this what happens, that here's this chapter this morning that dealt exactly with what I was experiencing. So back to you, Paul.
Wow, that's fascinating, Bill. Appreciate those thoughts. Star 6, who's next?
Well, good morning, Rick. Rick Martin from California. I'm actually trying to speak the way I really want in terms of volume and make my spectacular entry. I'm going to have to say that for next week. It is, you spoke about self-reliance this morning, and that's when it's so important that you truly believe in yourself. We know that the marketplace basically determines your worth, your value. You want to ask yourself, how can I become more valuable to the marketplace? It's very important. It's really an actual question. It's a question of direction, a question of purpose, a question of an outcome, an ultimate outcome, per se. In other words, what we do every day, is it taking us closer or farther away from the outcome? You know, who are you, your mission, your personal mission? It's why are you here? You're special, one of a kind, 1 in 7 billion, and there's none other like you. That's proven. And so you got to come to that realization and say, well, I'm here, as far as I know, only once. Nobody else can be me. I can't be anybody else. It's just not possible. And so at this point, you come to yourself and says, well, how can I be of more value to people? How can I live the best life possible? It's very important. Well, of course, by serving more people, by being more valuable. Give more in value than you take in payment. It doesn't matter in what endeavor. It doesn't matter what endeavor you take on. The creation, first creation, the mind, the power of thought. The universe was created from the power of thought. It's one of the most incredible things, that power. Self-reliance, Emerson. I'm going to repeat what Emerson said, and obviously I believe in this because I'm coming out of my own memory. To believe your own thoughts, to believe what is true for you in your private heart is true for all men. Speak your latent conviction, or it will become the universal sense, and your inmost ultimately become your utmost. And your first thought will be rendered back to you by the trumpet of the last judgment. Yes.
Peter, amazing, amazing man. How you doing, Doc? I am. You are, aren't you? I am. What are you doing today?
Hey, Rick, Star 6, unmute your line. Sorry for that. Someone had their line unmuted.
Salvador Island.
Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and so I wonder if everybody got that information on the self-reliance. It's self-reliance. It's so important. Now, let me go ahead and repeat that. I have no issue repeating this because it's really important. Yeah, you have to actually go over it. Well, a lot of times to really, really understand what he's saying here, you know? Now, this guy, Emerson, is pretty deep. If you're just reading it out for entertainment value or whatever it is, I'm looking for it for something to experience bliss, experience what is possible. And we know that the God created us in his own image. You know why? Do you know why? Because we are creators. We are creators. I stopped to think about this the other day. And I made this remark before that the greatest sin that man can ever make is to not take possession of his own mind. I still believe this. Because why? If you take a look at why he said he created us in his own image. We are creators. We know this. If we look around, we look around the world, we realize we are creators. The only thing that we cannot create is life. That's the difference that separates divine providence from us. Otherwise, we are in the exact image. The power of thought, the invocation, it's amazing. When you start to really dig in yourself, but why am I here? How would I want my friends to best remember me? You know, if you're not happy without money, let me put it to you this way. You're not going to be happy when you get it. This is how you can develop your own character, your own intrinsic value, gratitude, those little things like that. Loving people, doing the best you can. I shall pass this way but once. Therefore, any kindness or any good that I can show to any human being, let me do it now, not defer, for I shall not pass this way again. You have to have philosophies. You have to have something that says, I am the oak in this area, and nothing can change those because everything I do, sort of like the United States Constitution, doesn't matter how many times we make amendments, they have to go back and use the Constitution as a guide. You have to develop your own Constitution. You have to have your own Constitution because it's the direction. That's why we are envy of the world. Why? Because we have this Constitution. There's certain reasons why we cannot go into the different parts of the world and just wipe people out what we can, simply because the Constitution, our integrity, prevents us from doing this because that's the integrity of the United States. If at any point we deviate from this, then the power is lost. It's the same thing for us as individuals. Your integrity, the integer, is the whole number. Where are you? Decide now. You decide what kind of life you want to live. It's your decision. Right back to you, Paul.
Thank you, Rick. Star 6, who's next? I know we got a lot of people who want to speak today.
Good morning, Paul.
Levine, good morning. Was that Levine?
Yes, it was.
Okay, good morning.
How are you this morning?
Doing great, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. I just wanted to speak on how debilitating the fear of poverty can be, but at the same time, the fear of poverty can drive you, in my opinion, can drive you from one direction to the other. For example, with myself, the fear of poverty is the reason why I work so hard, the fear of not having an income, not having a roof over my head. So the fear of poverty for me is actually a catalyst to drive me to where I need to be every day, reminded that I do not want to be on the wrong side of the fence. But at the same time, of course, the fear of poverty for some people is what actually gets them stagnated and stuck in one place. And I even look at, for example, there's a post office not too far from my house, and I'm there a couple of days out the week, and there's a guy who's always there, always asking for money, begging for whatever kind of help. And it often occurs to me that if he put as much effort into improving himself and working towards a higher goal, even, for example, I gave him a business card one time and told him if he called me, I would help him get started and front him the money, because he definitely does not have a fear of talking to people. He doesn't have a fear of putting himself in an uncomfortable position, but he's allowed himself to get stuck in that place where every day he's in front of the post office opening doors for people, and as soon as they come out, he's begging for money when he could actually use that as an opportunity to build something better for himself. But I guess we all kind of get caught in our state of mind and allow us to believe that we are no better than our circumstances or our situation, and that's really not true. We are all better than most of the situations that happen to us. What's happening to us does not determine where we'll be in life unless we've allowed it to kind of get us stuck in that place. So it just, to me, sometimes, you know, fear can be a good thing in one sense if we utilize that energy to put it in the right places. So that's what I wanted to add today.
LaVie, thank you. That's a very fascinating point and right on topic and definitely worthy of discussion. You know, Dr. Hill tells us to eliminate fear, but I see exactly where you're coming from. If that does move you into action, possibly can be a benefit. Any thoughts on that? Star 6, love to hear from you.
Good morning. It's Judy from Florida.
Judy, good morning.
Good morning, everybody. Sorry I came in late. Thought I had a doctor appointment, but I didn't. what this chapter does for me is it points out I am one of those people that believes I have no fear. And in a lot of ways, I do not. But in a lot of subtle ways, I do. And this glares at me and points them out and gives me places to work from. And that, to me, is valuable. It's always been valuable to, and I've been spiritually stagnated for a while. I have my beliefs, this is a catalyst for me, as LaVie was talking about, the catalyst, the fear of. And when I find myself in a place like that, I search, and I have searched and I have found, and what I, you know, it is hard to take a look at yourself. It is hard to look in the mirror and learn things about yourself. It is for me, but it's also refreshing. It's hopeful. It's so many positives out of some small negatives. And like Dr. Hill says, you know, get the information and find out what's standing in your way, and it doesn't matter if it's going to sting or embarrass, because that's just a state of mind also. Embarrassment is a state of mind. And it's, you know, things to get past. It's something that I can get past. And this, this power group that I've become a part of has become so valuable to me. And I find myself slipping back so many times during the day. And I chastise myself. And thank God I do. Because I know there's a better way to do things. I'm learning a better way. And to take whatever I find that is standing in my way and to turn it around, to have that opportunity and grace to recognize it, to see it in myself, to me is a godsend. You know, to me, that is valuable information. So, you know, if you're finding that, you know, finding things in yourself that may be a negative, turn it around to a positive, because that's what this is all about. And I just wanted to say thank you again, everybody, every day, for being here for me. Back to you.
Thank you, Judy, and thank you for being here for us. Star 6, who's next? And please mute your line back out if you've spoken today so we can keep the lines clean.
Good morning, everyone. This is Rashid from New Jersey.
Good morning, Rashid.
Hey, good morning, Paul. Just wanted to add something to the call really quickly. I heard in the readings today where you said a part about the fear of poverty and when a man can't find a job, for the most part, it destroys him. And I am like the prime example of that. Back in 2005, when I graduated high school, I went to a vocational school up in West Carwell. That's a part of Jersey here. I studied automotive technology. And, you know, I was so gung-ho on trying to be a mechanic and, yeah, you know, I'm going to fix cars and make all this money and yada, 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 et cetera, et cetera. Well, it didn't work out that way. I thought I was going to get a job at a dealership, every dealership that I applied for. They wanted you to have dealership experience. And I was trying to figure out how the heck am I supposed to have dealership experience if nobody wants to hire me. Then I started, you know, stooped down a little lower. I said, let me go to some private shops. And only thing that was holding me back from that was a license. At the time, I was 17 years old. You know, I had passed my test to take my permit. I just, you know, didn't have the money to go and, you know, get the driving school and everything together to, you know, to get the license. So I have no job. I have no money. I can't go to driving school. What the heck am I supposed to do? So it took a toll on me, and it made me feel so low that most mornings I would wake up and I wouldn't even brush my hair. But then I had this small little voice in me, this willpower, I guess, that just made me get up and keep on trucking. But for months, I mean, for about 3 or 4 months, I just felt like I was at my lowest point. I had $2.50 in my name. I didn't know what to do, but I just had to find a way to pull out. So I ended up going and calling my old high school, and they used to have these people there who helped you with job placement. And I gave them a call to help me find a job. And, you know, then from there I've been pretty much working ever since. I no longer do automotive, but I just wanted to just let it be known that that is very much true for anybody who may not know what that's like. But, yeah, that's something serious. So that's all I wanted to add today. Thank you.
Rashid, thank you so much for sharing that very personal experience, very poignant, and just so happy for you that you're in a better direction and, you know, choosing and taking action and seeing better things. Appreciate that. Star 6, who's next?
Mr. Hutchings.
Marty Kuzel.
How are you, sir?
Excellent. Thanks for asking.
Great. Excellent. I'm glad to hear that. Hope everybody's doing well on the call. I just wanted to make a quick statement. You know, I've been listening to everybody's comments, and basically it comes down to one thing. You know, when life hits you, it hits you hard, and if you get caught in a circle, it's so hard to pull out of it. And when you see people in different circumstances, it's not always the depiction of where they want to be. Maybe they just don't know what to do to get out of it. Because if you try, like right, Heeb, I believe his name was, he went to a dealership. Couldn't do that. He went. They needed a license. So it's a catch-22. It kept going around and around and around. You know, just like balance. How about the guy in front of the post office? You know, he's just going around and around. It's so hard to get out of the catch-22. And all we can do is offer them hope and show them a light. And hopefully they grasp towards it and want to get out of it. But they could be so far in their situation, they just don't know what to do. So, you know, it's a vicious world out there. So, you know, always go for the positive. Try to keep the negative out. But, you know, if you see someone in a bad situation, you know, it may not always be what it seems. You know, a book, you know, it always doesn't seem like you can't always judge a book by the cover. So, you know, stop and see if there's something you can do for them. See if you can get them out of the situation. Maybe they just don't know where to turn. And that's all I wanted to give to the call today. It was my comment. Appreciate everybody on the call. Thanks for letting me speak. Have a great day. Back to you, Paul.
Thank you, Marty. Appreciate those comments. Star 6, who's next?
Hey, Paul, it's Lindy.
Lindy, go ahead.
When you opened up and you were telling of a difficult day yesterday, and one thing you said really resonated with me, because this is the way I think about obstacles and hardships and challenges that come, you know, and they all come. We, you know, we have them, and there's a reason for it. And whenever you said you stopped and you looked and you sought out, what can I learn from this? I think that is so powerful, because when you look at every situation as a learning experience, it empowers you instead of bringing you down. And, you know, I like to think of it as I have a tool belt, and every hardship, every challenge, every mountain that feels, you know, unclimbable, are all things that God has given me in my life. And when I conquer those and I do learn from it, I get a tool and it goes in my belt. And then I get to move on to the next challenge, because that's how we really learn, is through challenges. And when my tool belt is full, that's whenever God will reveal what he has planned for me, and I am open and I am ready to do his will whenever it comes. And I will be prepared because I've got my tools and I am ready to take them out of my belt and put them into action and work with them. So, you know, hardships are not negatives unless you look at them as negatives. They are positives, and we can always learn from everything, from everybody. And, you know, when we respect other people for their choices, then we are respecting ourselves for our own. So that's what I have to add today. And thank you, everybody. I just cannot tell you how grateful I am to have been led to this group. This has made such a difference in my life. And the hope and the love and the teamwork and everything is absolutely priceless. So thank you. Back to you, Paul.
Lindy, that was absolutely brilliant. You are an amazing communicator. If I heard nothing else on this call, which I have heard a lot of great things, what you just shared, that metaphor of the tool belt, wow, so impactful. Thank you, Lindy. Star 6, who's next?
Good morning, Paul.
Neville, good morning.
How are you all today?
We're excellent.
Great. Love hearing you guys' voice on the call. Love hearing everyone today, and everyone has been marvelous. Let me say this morning, and we have issues in our lives at times, and a lady was talking about the tool belt. But she also said that she count all things, you know, and move on. The Bible also tells us you should count all things as joy, which means when problems come into your life or good things, you don't just accept the good things and say, oh, that is great, and so forth. But you accept the bad things. You look at it, like you said this morning in your monologue, that you go back and review the day and say, what happened there and what did and why such a thing took place. But I'm going to say something now that's something that we say God put these things into our life. If God put those things into your lives, then God will give you a test. I don't think God tests us because of the simple reason this. God already knows what we're going to do. So therefore, he wouldn't test us. What actually happened to us is this. If we go back and look at, for those of us who read the Bible and are biblical, we go back and look at, say, Deuteronomy 28, and you look at the first part, if you do these things, you're going to be. However, if you do not do these things, and you do certain things, this is what's going to happen to you. And what has happened to us in life sometimes, we're not consistent. Like Paul now has become extremely consistent in his belief in our Think and Grow Rich and other philosophy he has read, knowing fully well that he's blessed and that he can move forward, but he has to do the things that he'll learn to do and do them to the best of his ability. What happens to us sometimes is that we start doing these things, like keeping a diary, making notes, and analyzing ourselves each day. We start making schedules and prioritizing our days from the day before and planning each day and going ahead and through the plan. Sometimes we don't follow through on the plan. After a while, we start doing it, things begin to work, we take on too many other responsibilities, and we drift away from what was making us successful in the first place. So if we minimize the outside attractions, I mean taking on too many other things, and concentrate on the things that we need to do, and live within our sense of definition of purpose, and move forward in that direction, then we will succeed, and we'll succeed consistently. I can tell you I suffer that because I've deviated from what I was doing and lost a lot of things, and I'm learning that, and begin to understand that this too can help us. One more thing I'd like to add to everybody. We love to speak of the fact that Thomas Edison, the good doctor, studied the 500 rich folks and so forth. But he also studied the people who were not so rich. And that's why he was able to come up with the philosophy showing us what we need to do to be wealthy in this world. He said, think and grow rich. But wealth is just the fact that the money, and I can attest to you that when I have money, it does certain things to you. It gives you freedom to do the things that you want to do without stress. And once you're able to do that, you're able to react in a more normal way. Money doesn't make you wicked unless you plan to be wicked before. I believe when you have money, you use it in such a way that it benefits those around who needs to be benefited. You can give to the church. You can give to charity. We're coming up with day one. You make money so you can help others. And that's what it comes down to. But I honestly do not think that our Father in heaven gives us trouble. They come because we fail to follow the directions that keeps us from slipping into that thing. We give the enemy a chance to get a foothold. We give fear a chance to get a foothold. We let procrastination take us down a different road. So many things that we do puts us in that negative place. So as long as we try to accentuate the positive and try to remain in that positive glow, this call, this positive net that comes here, with those of you who meet on your own, you stay there and you stay there and you stay there and you practice what you preach, and one day we'll meet each other at the top. Back to you, Paul.
Neville, love those thoughts, my friend. You are such a wise man, and I'm so grateful that you're a part of this group. Thank you. Star 6, who's next?
Hey, Paul, it's Richard.
Hey, Richard.
Hey, tell you what, those last two callers, a great lead into what I was wanting to talk about. For the longest time, you know, I've been struggling, you know, with life and money and different situations, and, you know, and I've told you about this, you know, now that I am where I am, I feel more secure. I'm more confident, and I was still scared, you know, in a sense. And so it took me a couple months to actually realize what I actually had in front of me. And then I finally told myself, I said, you know what? I said, when I look around, people have been so brainwashed into thinking that they cannot succeed. And it's everywhere you turn. And, you know, I was listening to the call from last night about that the gentleman that you would talk to, and it opened my eyes. And even this morning when you mentioned it again, you know, for the longest time I was, you know, I'm still struggling with the company that I'm in right now, and I've always told myself, I said, you know what? There's leaders and there's followers, you know, and I want to be a leader. And what I want to do is I don't want to create more followers. I want to create more leaders. And just like the proverb that I've mentioned before, you know, feed a man a fish, you feed him for a day, but teach a man to fish, you feed him for a lifetime. And that's my goal. And I think you know the opportunity that has befallen in front of me. And I have an opportunity to do that. And what a blessing. I think it fills my heart so much more knowing that I'm able to help people now when I was in the same situation they were in just not too long ago. And it's just, if you believe in yourself, and yeah, fear is, it kind of, you know, makes people stumble, but it also wakes people up. Because if you're put into a situation where you have to make a choice and you're scared to death on what choice you want to make, you just got to believe in yourself, believe in God, and believe in that there's people around you that are willing to help out. And what I want to do, I don't know if the guy that was you talked to last night is even on the call today, but I have an opportunity for him, and I think you know what I'm talking about, but I don't want to, you know, just blurt it out to everybody. If there's a way that maybe later on this afternoon or whatnot we can get him on the phone with a three-way call, I have a pretty good opportunity I think he can't turn down. So, but guys, I tell you what, you know, I've always told you, Paul, that, you know, I'm grateful for you, grateful for what you've been doing, but I've just realized it's not just you that I'm grateful for. I'm grateful for every single person on this call, every single person that I've listened to It's everybody. We are a family. And I tell you what a great family that I'm in right now, because I am so high on life right now. It's just unbelievable. So I'm sorry. It just caught me off guard there. I love every one of you guys, and we are here to make a difference, and what a difference we're making. So back to you, Paul.
And that's the power. Wow. Richard, thank you so much for coming out and sharing those thoughts and sharing your faith and your vision and your feeling and your excitement and passion and love for what we're doing. You get it, my friend. And you know what? You are a leader. You make the decision to be a leader. You make the decision to develop people, and you're a leader. As soon as you make that decision, that's it. So. Well, we are at time, so thank you for being on this call. I know that I've gotten so many gems of wisdom here on this call today, so thank you for that. I hope you have as well. Let's get out there, make it a great day, have faith, take action, move forward with faith and persistence. And, you know, one final thought, faith versus fear. We hear, you know, there's a scripture that says God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. And we hear that, you know, fear of loss is a great motivator, and faith. Here's a thought for us to kind of think about. What if fear is a lower form of motivation? And what we want to do is maybe use it when we need to, but what we really want to strive to do in life, potentially, I'm just posing this as a question to think about, is move from the lower to the higher and learn to be motivated and to motivate others from the higher tone or vibration of love, of vision, of purpose, of truth. Just a thought, you know, it's just the thought that came to me from the discussion today. So I love you. Thank you for what you do. Make it a great day, and we'll see you back here tomorrow morning on the Think and Grow Rich call. Take care, everyone.